The reason people aren't financially free is they don't know what to do and they don't know where to start. I want you to join Joey and I at the Virtual Inner Circle Live, April the 4th through the 6th, as we share with you the exact answers to those questions. We only do this event one time per year. I don't want you to miss out. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter promo code podcast. When you're at this event, you're going to get your investor DNA. You're going to get access to up to 6 different passive income strategies. So you know, leaving this event, exactly what to do, taking our decades of knowledge so that you can start becoming financially free. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter the promo code podcast.
When starting a brand new policy, a lot of times the question comes to me is, what would you have done differently knowing what you know now? And, you know, I look back at different experiences in my life, and I want to take you through this journey, Joey, of when Megan and I built a house. We didn't use an architect. We tried to just let the builder go and just, you know, use our ability to put stuff in Pinterest. And what we've been left with is a kitchen that is disconjointed. Mm. A dining room that is off center, lights that are not bright enough and not enough of, to know that I need to hand over the reins to an expert. And I think today is a great example of sometimes when people are asking us about how do we design policies, they're really wanting to know how does that compare to what they read on the internet.
Right.
And I relate that what you read on the internet to me and Megan on Pinterest, trying to decide what the house needed to look like and trying to tell someone, and they just followed what we told them. Unfortunately, it didn't quite work out to plan.
Now, what I would say though, in adding to that, is you had to be informed, right? I don't think going into the infinite banking process and just blindly saying, yeah, I want to do one of these policies, because I've had that happen. I've had clients come to me and say, hey, look at this policy I started 2 years ago. I told them I wanted one of those infinite banking policies. And they come back and it's an IUL, an index universal life policy, which is clearly not what Nelson has in the book. But they weren't informed. They didn't know what to look for. So I think there's a balance there. You have to know something, but then you do have to work with the practitioner who understands how to design this with the framework of what's important to you, why it's important to you, and then what your goals are and how you're going to meet those for financial freedom.
All of those things are what we need to know as we're on our journey to financial freedom. And this is a part of the Inner Circle Roundtable that we do every single Tuesday, where we go deeper into a subject matter. And today's episode is being brought to you by our friend Mark Podolsky in the Land Geek. So if you guys haven't had a chance, make sure you check out some of the stuff that he's been putting into the community, because that's something you and I, Joey, are using on our way to financial freedom. And I hope today's episode on how and what a properly structured policy looks like will help you in step 2 of taking control on your way to financial freedom. Let's belly up.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome into the roundtable, the man, Mr. Incredible, the one who can lift a hamburger, a financial strategy, and the $1 million smile all at once, Mr. J.D. Hill. What's up, J.D.?
Wow, that was quite an intro right there. Thank you. I can definitely lift a hamburger, no problem. Or a taco, piece of pizza, really any food at all. I can lift it. I'm a food connoisseur, as they say.
Yes. Yes, you are. And we are glad to have you on our side for sure. Now, the man between two bamboo, our resident pilot, the ones who are going to help you get to your financial destination safely, Mark, the Gooch Hargucci. What's up, Mark?
Not much, gentlemen. Another day. Let's see what we got on tap for this roundtable.
Well, we've got a conversation that is interesting in the fact that we get the question a lot of times whenever someone's at the point of wanting to start the process of infinite banking. They've met with you as the coach. You guys have walked through the kind of clarity moments of why this fits into the overall picture. At the point at which we start going down the road with the insurance company, the conversation leads to, okay, well, what's the best way to design the policy? And for some of you, you're like, I don't care. You guys are the experts. I'm going to leave it to you. You know, I just want to sit back and get to my destination safely. But then there's some that are like, no, I want to get my arms and hands dirty in this thing. I want to look at it. So Joey, when somebody comes to you and says, what does a properly structured whole life policy look like? What do you tell them?
It all depends on where you're headed and what you're trying to accomplish. And I think what's really going on in someone's head at that point is they're trying to make sure that they don't make a mistake, right? That they're not setting this up wrong and then looking back and saying, ooh, I wish I would have known this, or I wish I'd have known that. And they're trying to think about the policy itself as being a win or lose type of situation.
Yeah, I think that's true. Mark, what do you think the real issue is at hand when someone asks, how do I best set up this policy?
I'd have to, you know, echo part of what Joey said there. I think a lot of people are trying to get the home run on the first shot. You know, it's like NASA trying to make it to the moon on the first rocket launch, and recognizing that, you know, a lot of times the most important thing is getting out of the gate. And there's always time to come back and do other things.
JD, this is an interesting topic. It you know, this is one that can get deep and sometimes controversial at moments. What would you say is the issue at hand?
I think it's a number of things. You know, one is like what Mark just said and what Joey has said, but also not really having clarity on what you're trying to accomplish, right? If you're unclear on what that is, I think we get kind of torn in between, you know, wanting to have my cake and eat it, so I want everything up front, right? But also want everything on the back end too. And if we're not real clear on what it is we're really trying to solve for, I think it makes it tough to figure out what the best solution is.
Well, and, you know, if you're new to the subject matter and you don't even know what we're talking about how the cake is made, if you will. The insurance policy has multiple components. It has a portion that goes directly to the death benefit. We call that the base premium. In some situations, we may divide that base premium by adding a type of term insurance. It's a rider on there to help get more coverage for a little bit cheaper cost inside of this whole life plan. And then we add this other thing called a paid up additions rider. So what we're talking about is what is the best way? What is the way that we should design and structure that? And this is one of those things that early on when I started out in my career, Ernie, there was no foundational tool that I could really go to outside of becoming your own banker. And I had to look at it to try to figure out, how do I go about designing these policies? And what I figured out is when I was talking to Nelson, he had a handful of hard and fast rules. First rule, you got to think long range. The second rule is that you cannot be afraid to capitalize. And he was talking about putting money in. And I was just having a discussion today with a guy on the phone. He was asking me this question about how do we design policies? And I said, look, you know, Nelson Nash's book is a good foundational tool for us to go to and refer back. But even it, Nelson would say, was not a practical application. He meant when he designed the book, he was trying to make it easy for the person to consume it. And he was not using it as the perfect thing. But people are challenged by this. What are some of the challenges that you see people face as they're trying to figure out what's the perfect design? And maybe it's you being challenged by how to help them through that process.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm challenged because everybody's scenario is a little bit different. But I think people generally, what you just said, you had nothing to, there was no foundational tool for you to evaluate this. I think typically people coming at this to start, their experience so far is determining, well, what allocation do I need to put towards bonds and stocks? You know, they're used to thinking in those sorts of
zero
terms.
And zero.
Zero. So people are used to accustomed to thinking that way. And so when they start thinking about these policies, they're comparing it already to something that we ought not to be comparing this to.
All right, Joey. So tell me, what are some of the potential, like if we're going to break this out, I feel like first we need to take a step back. And I think there's some problems that we're facing as America. And I don't mean by the fact that we got to choose from, you know, who we're choosing for our political party this November. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying like we got challenges before us in our personal finance. And this subject matter, it gets put in front of other things. What would you say are big problems of facing America today?
I think overall, there's a lack of education as it pertains to finances. And just like what Ernie was saying, we've been trained a certain way to ask really the wrong question. And so many questions come into this policy conversation. It's people don't know where it fits. They don't know how to categorize this in their head. So it's a brand new thing. And they're saying, wait a minute, it must be like my portfolio allocation. There must be some like magic formula to making this as efficient as possible. And anyway, I think that's part of it.
What do you think, Mark? What's the big obstacle facing America today?
I'd put it in the bucket of the instant gratification addiction. Now we've become so accustomed to wanting something and then being able to click. And, you know, depending on where you live, Amazon can deliver it within 24 hours. So I think a lot of people want that instant gratification versus what Nelson says, which is the long range thought process, right? The long range plan. And so that instant gratification is inhibiting them from being able to see that other opportunity.
JD, what's your thought on it?
That's really good. Real quick, if you want a little hack about Amazon, anything that you're looking to buy on Amazon, if you just go put it in your cart and don't buy it, Amazon will actually start shipping those items to a facility near where you are so that when you are ready to buy it, you can get it within a day. A little hack about Amazon, just so that you want to, if you're interested, that's how you get faster packages delivered. But no, I think it's shiny object syndrome. Right. I think there's so many really cool things, right, in air quotes, that are out there. And there's so many different shiny objects that we get fixated on one thing and then somebody shines something else right in front of us. And so we pivot and we move somewhere else and then another shiny object and we pivot and we go somewhere else. And we don't stick to something long enough to really see any merit or meat from that decision. And I'm reminded of a quote, I guess, that a mentor of mine had told me at one time, he said, you know, the only way to test any decision is time, right? And I think that if we get focused and clear on what it is we're really trying to go after, it helps to avoid us from that shiny object syndrome.
Ernie, what do you think?
I like those. I'm going to go with obesity.
Yeah, call Joey out like that.
Come on, man.
And I mean, not just physical obesity, which I think in our culture is a bit of an issue, but just our appetites for a lot of things, whether it be instant gratifications, shiny object syndrome, I agree with those. But just our rate of consumption, we want to go so much so fast. And if you live in Texas, it's even a bigger problem. It's got to be the biggest, not just the fastest.
Take it easy. There's a Texan here.
So, and when we look at that in terms of our finances, a couple of years ago, the average savings rate was right in the 6-7% range is what people were saving, where our appetites to consume are much greater than I think they ought to be.
Well, I think the reason, I mean, I want to tie all this stuff together because there are areas that we're struggling with. And in the subject matter of infinite banking, a lot of times the focus gets put on the solution. And Nelson was always very clear when Joey and I and Ernie would sit down and have lunch with him, he would tell us on a regular basis, if you understand the problem, the solution will be really clear. But most people don't understand the problem. And one of the things I would hear him talk about is the problem is that people are underfunded. They don't have enough capital. And that's the reason why he said that was one of his three hard, fast rules is don't be afraid to capitalize. Because you've never met a business that went out of business because it had too much money,
right?
That's right.
Right. When they go out of business, it's because they don't have any, right? And capital is what we all need to help us move forward in our journey toward financial freedom. It allows us to buy the assets. It's going to allow us to pay for the education that we need. It's going to allow us to weather some of the storms that may come, right? I mean, we're in the short-term rental business, Joey, and thankfully, we got to learn from someone who went through the COVID stuff before us and told us, here's how we pivoted. Here's what we did and found a new market to get the customers, because people were still needing a place to put their head down at night. It just wasn't coming in the form of business travel, right?
Yeah, from international business
travel. It was changing. And I think what we need to know is we always need to have capital. We want so badly to get to our destination that we sometimes miss some of these issues. I appreciate you guys sharing those with us so that way we can get there. So Joey, what do you think though? I mean, as we start getting a little more granular into the subject matter of how a policy should be created, what are some things that as we're riding down the road or getting ready to meet with one of our coaches, what do we need to be thinking about?
I think what do we need to be thinking about? We need to be thinking about all those rules that you just mentioned, like from Nelson's standpoint. If we're not afraid to capitalize, I think that has to do with the amount of money that we're putting in. We've been trained to be like these Walmart shoppers, right? And say, well, how much can I put into something? What's the least amount I have to put into it? In fact, how many times does that conversation come up? And you may be even thinking about it right now as we're talking about this, is what's the least amount to get started? And while I definitely understand where you're coming from, when you think about how opportunity finds cash, just like what Russ has been talking about here and Nelson was very clear on, you're going to want to create a policy in such a way that it will hold as much cash as you can possibly put in without going over that MEC limit. You can always expand later, okay? I'm not trying to take away from that. That it is a system of policies. It's not just one that has to be perfect and crystal clear. But don't be afraid to capitalize, meaning let's build this thing with the ability to hold as much as possible, knowing we can always back down if need be. That's one of my initial thoughts.
JD, I got the question today. I'm going to let you answer. I'd love to hear how you answer it. So the question came to me today from a guy who said, what is the one thing that most people, after they've had a policy for a while, wish that they would have known from the beginning? How would you answer that question?
Wow, that is a very philosophical question.
In all superhumans, right? They do have weaknesses. For Superman, it was this like alien rock.
Yep.
Kryptonite.
And kryptonite, right? And
I am Superman.
For Mr. Incredible, it must be philosophical questions.
That's right. I think it would be to probably what Nelson said all the time, right? Just to not be scared to capitalize, right? To not be scared to like fund your policy. You know,
how has that played out though, JD?
Help him out then, Joey. I agree with what he's saying. We've interviewed so many people on the subject matter that they're saying the same thing, but practically.
Yeah. Every time people come to us later and they say, well, how much more can I put in this year? And I'm like, well, you're maxed. You've paid your base premium. You've paid your paid up additions rider. In fact, Ernie and I have this conversation quite a bit. When he was doing a lot of service work, he would come to me and say, hey, so-and-so wants to put more money in his policy. And I say, well, what does he have left to put in? No, he paid everything. He's still got 11 months to his premiums.
I would just like to say I had one of those follow-up conversations with an existing one of our clients yesterday, same conversation.
Okay. But here's what it's really born out of is we all, when we step into something new, we kind of just want to stick our toe in the water, right? And let me just try it out. I get it. I want to make sure I get it fully. And so that's when we talk about expanding the system, because one policy designed properly can only hold so much cash.
Well, so that's the question that we're at right now is how do you actually design it? And what are maybe some of the limitations? What are some of the things keeping us from designing it well? I mean, and clearly it can be poor advisors. I think there's some people that could have called me a poor advisor early on, and it would have been truthful because I was learning on the job. I had no idea. And there was no example for me to even go look at. I traveled the country. I met with tons of people. I would sit down with Nelson and ask him, how do I design this policy? And I would, and if you, I mean, if you ever had a chance to meet Nelson, he would not give you a straight answer on stuff like
not
that.
Not ever.
That was not something that he was more about the way you thought about it and not the way it actually happened. So there are confusions. There are things that we see and read on the internet. Because if you go out there on the internet right now, and if you went and interviewed five different advisors, true or false, they would potentially get five different ways to design the whole life policy.
100% true.
It's true. There is the ability to, there would be a network of, we're going to be in a similar boat with several of them though, I would think.
Okay. Where would they find that?
Yeah. Well, I do think about if, when we say, when we talk about, or when we hear people who are interviewing different groups to pick a great coach, always tell them every time, use it as a baseline to make sure that you're getting good information, that you're looking for people who are affiliated with the Nelson Nash Institute and people who are authorized to be practitioners of this concept. And even though, even with that group, you can talk with them, we might get a slightly different solution from each. We have some confidence that'll be a good one.
All right, JD, what do you think about how someone should design a policy? Like, if we're going to like get down and try to figure out this process, how do you go about doing it when working with someone?
Well, I want to, you know, frame it first to for people to understand, like, what we're doing with the policy is, this is not the investment, right? This is where you put your money before you make the investment. And I think that's crucial that people have that foundation, right? That they understand that, because that gives us so much more context to how we then go about designing the policy, right? Because we get so fixated on the rate of return, right, on the policy. But when we understand that what this is where you go first before you make the investment, it then helps us, I think, appropriately, you know, put parameters around how we want to design a policy. You know, and I don't necessarily have a hard and fast rule on what those ratios should be, but I do think it's important that we understand, you know, how much cash are we, you know, is there an immediate need that you have right away, right? Is there an investment, a real estate deal or a business transaction that we're trying to take advantage of right now, right? That we need liquidity for, you know, we want to take those types of things into consideration.
So Mark, whenever you were, I mean, you're the most recent to the coaching realm. So you were sitting on the opposite end of the table, the most recently, what were some of those internal questions that you were wondering or fighting as you were setting up those first policies, or in essence, I was helping you set up those first policies?
I have to say my primary question was, we'll see how long Russ can stay in the family. No, you know, to be honest with you guys, I wasn't really in the weeds on it because I had a lot of stuff going on in my world. So I came at it from the perspective of, look, you know, I was fortunate you guys helped me with the education, read the book. So I was confident and comfortable with the philosophy, and I was prepared to relinquish some control and trust in my advisor that, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. Okay. And at that time, you know, long-term rentals, that was really my focus. And I'm like, this is what I want to do. This is my goal. And so that information is what I put out on the table. And then you took that, and then you came back with the best opportunity for me based on that information.
Stal, you wanted to jump in there, it looked like.
Well, you saw me kind of jumping a little bit. Like, yeah. I do that.
I didn't know if you had a spur underneath the saddle or what.
I think what I wanted to mention was, and JD alluded to this, and what you just said, Mark, kind of resonates as well, is that sometimes we can kind of lose sight of the trade-off that happens in a policy. And I'm going to get a little bit mechanical here. When we put so much into the paid up additions rider, or we do like a huge lump sum up front, that is great because we have an immediate thing that we want to use cash for. Like we want to maximize the amount of cash that we can have available. But the disappointing part comes, let's say it's 2 or 3 years in and someone says, wait a minute, my base premium is so low. I have all this excess cash. What do I do with it? And the policy just can't hold it anymore. So it is a trade-off. We have to kind of factor that in. That's part of the whole capitalization period. We don't want to trade access to capital today for the inability to put it in later on a policy. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
It does. And I think if you're riding down the road and you were hoping that we were going to tell you that you should have, you know, 40% of your money going to the base premium, 60% going to the PUA, or, you know, 80% going to PUA and 20% to base or whatever that is, you're probably like, dang it, guys. I thought you were going to give me some numbers. And by the way, we are going to look at some numbers in the inner circle.
What? The inner circle. If you're not a part of the inner circle by now, shame on you. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/innercircle. And you can be a part of the recording of this podcast and our hot seat guest and Q&A after this, where we do dive deeper. We show our screen. You can go into a lot more detail. So join us today if you haven't already.
All right, Ernie, as we start to wrap up, what do you think someone's ultimate objective as they set up these policies? They're looking to get the design, quote unquote, perfect. What do you believe, though, is the ultimate goal?
Well, we want to practice the concept and we want to have a place where we can put cash. So to have confidence in where we're going to put cash, there is a dynamic of a relationship to do that. I've got myself who wants a policy. And not only do I want to have a policy, but I want to know how to operate the policy. And so I need to learn those things. And on the other side, there is, we've used the word advisor a lot today. I don't know if that's exactly the best word for that when it comes to actually creating the policy. Maybe that fits. But really what we're looking for is more of a coaching relationship. Mm. Someone I can trust to design a policy that's going to fit, but also someone who's also going to be able to tell, to teach me and equip me to use it. So I think really that's the ultimate goal. And this design is a part of that. But I think ultimately what we're trying to do is implement and practice the concept.
So good. Well, thank you for listening. Hopefully we raise some maybe questions that you should be asking yourself. Because a lot of times internally, we're trying to determine, am I making a mistake, right? How do I know where I should start? What is the proper split of these things that you guys didn't even really go into detail? And ultimately, how much money do I need to do all of these things? And that is why our group exists, is to help answer those questions, but also put those questions in context to your overall goals. I love the way you said that, Ernie, because this is a journey. It's a mission that we're all heading toward, to try to get to financial freedom. And that's when our passive income is greater than our monthly expenses. And this is just one of the strategies, using one of the tools that's going to help us on that journey. So have an amazing day. We'll see you next week as we come back to talk deeper about another subject on infinite banking. Ernie, what do you think that subject matter is going to be?
Oh, I can't remember.
It's going to be how we can make a policy 3 years old in 18 months. Ooh.
Cliffhanger.
All right. See you next week.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand, so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.